Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio show. I'm your host, Robert Helms. You've heard the Fed is printing money, quantitative easing, whatever you want to call it. A lot more money is working its way into the economy, and that's not likely to stop. When you hear about trillions in stimulus, the big question is, what does that mean for real estate and real estate investors? We'll answer that question today with two amazing guests on the Real Estate Guys radio program.
Don't be like Charlie, who scans the internet for IRA information, often getting bad information from copycats who have no idea what they're doing. You deserve to work with a reputable firm that specializes in one thing, the EQRP. Lucky for you, Congress just made it possible for you to get up to $200,000 out of your current 401k or TSP, so you can invest that money in real estate or even your own business. Even if you're still working, it's possible to get access to all this money tax-free. Whether you're a full-time investor, a doctor, or a government employee, even if you have employees, the EQRP is your secret weapon. You'll never see this strategy in Money Magazine, only here with the Real Estate Guys. Every major accounting firm in America is quietly sharing this strategy with their wealthy clients, helping them get their funds freed from 401k jail. Hi, I'm Damian Lupo, and we have your solution. With the CARES Act expiring soon, this strategy will be gone forever. The EQRP company is ready to help you unleash your retirement funds now. Want to learn more about this strategy? Send an email to eqrp@realestateguysradio.com for my special EQRP report today.
Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms. With me, as usual, it's our financial strategist and co-host, Russell Gray.
Hey, Robert.
You know, these are such interesting times we're going through, and we've got the health side of the COVID-19 pandemic, and we've got the economic side, and there's maybe more to come. We're certainly watching it. But one of the things we have noticed and want to talk about this week is the fact that the stimulus, the money printing, the handing out of big chunks of money to small businesses, small checks to Americans, all that money printing isn't without consequence. And one of the big questions is, what does that mean to real estate investors?
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, there is a group of the audience who started their real estate investing career post-2008. To me, it just seems like it happened yesterday, but it was actually 12 years ago. And so there's a whole bunch of experience that you don't have, but you only have to pick up anecdotally by listening to the old people like us talk about it. But if you haven't gone back and studied what really happened in 2008, how it started, how it rolled out, how the powers that be, meaning the federal government and the Federal Reserve, not the same thing, by the way. If you have any doubt about that, read The Creature from Jekyll Island by our good friend G. Edward Griffin. But if you don't understand how that whole thing rolled out, you're going to have a hard time understanding what's going on right now and why so many of us that are a little bit longer in the tooth are concerned. But the short of it is you had a disruption in payments by some subprime borrowers that were overextended, that were betting the farm on a continuous environment of declining interest rates and appreciating real estate prices. And when that bet went bad, the bonds supporting them, the mortgage-backed securities, went bad also, to a very small degree, but because they had been levered up in the derivatives market, which was a mystery back then, people didn't understand it. Even at the Federal Reserve level, they didn't understand it. So Ben Bernanke, the then Fed chair, was saying, hey, this is no problem. But then what happened is it became a problem, and the response to that was called quantitative easing, which is basically printing of money. And their Fed's balance sheet, which is kind of how much money they've printed, started 2008 at $800 billion and went all the way up to $4.5 trillion.
Well, let's stop there for a minute, Russ, because no investor left behind. All of a sudden, the balance sheet has expanded, which really means there's a lot more dollars in the economy. And what happens, this is really kind of dumbing it down, if you will, but if there's more dollars that can chase goods and services and products, then those prices go up. And we saw price inflation, many of us the beneficiaries of price inflation in real estate, but there's a lot more permutations to that. And that's just in that short period of time. Since then, a lot more has happened.
Yeah. You know, the plan was, hey, this is extraordinary measures. You know, Henry Paulson, then Secretary of the Treasury, said, you know, the $800 billion TARP program was a big bazooka that you carry around, but you don't really have to use. There were all kinds of things that were said, and they tried to downplay what it was. But ultimately, they were never able to unwind the balance sheet. So they went up to $4.5 trillion, and they tried to taper taper it down. They got to about 3.7 trillion. They tried to raise interest rates. They only got up to 50 basis points, which is 0.5%. And the economy and the market started to sputter and they had to back it down. Then the COVID-19 crisis happened. Businesses were closed, paychecks stopped, and now you have payments not being made on a lot more debt. In between the end of the 2008 crisis and the beginning of the 2020 crisis, a lot of equity happened to stocks, to real estate. And if you've been riding that equity gravy train, you're exactly where I was at in 2007 when the cracks were starting to emerge. It had been a great run. You did not want it to be over. I know, speaking for myself, I was in a degree of confusion and denial. And so what's important right now is that you reach out or you listen to people who have been there, who understood it. And that's exactly what we're doing today. Because a guy who saw 2008 coming and went on the record and told everybody was Peter Schiff. And we sought him out and we became friends with him. And if you've been following us for any length of time, you know we spent a lot of time with Peter. We love Peter. We've learned a lot from Peter. And then we have another special guest too, because we're going to dig into what's going on right now and where all this could be headed. Is it 2008 all over again? Is it going to be worse or is it not? What's an investor to do? We're going to talk about that.
Our first guest today is Nomi Prinz. She is an author, journalist, public speaker. She writes about Wall Street and the American economy. She has a background in banking and very prolific author. She wrote an incredible book called Collusion. She wrote All the President's Bankers. She has a novel actually called Black Tuesday and what I think is a great title for a book, It Takes a Pillage. Plus, she's just dynamic and brilliant. When we come back, you'll meet Nomi Prinz on the Real Estate Guys radio program.
Real estate investment advice right in your mailbox. Sign up for the free Real Estate Guys newsletter at realestateguysradio.com.
When the world changes, investing strategy changes too. The coronavirus is disrupting economies, financial systems, and daily life like nothing in modern history. Sheltering in place might protect you from the virus, but a wait-and-see approach to investing now is like pulling the sheets over your head while the house burns down. It's not the time to be complacent. So we're calling our huge network of thought leaders, seasoned investors, and technical experts to find out what they're seeing, thinking, and doing to mitigate risk and capture opportunity, and we're recording all of it. We're calling it our Coronavirus Crisis Investing Webinar, and it's totally free. All you need to do is register. Remember, mainstream media doesn't talk to real estate investors. They don't understand you because Wall Street pays them not to. That's why the Real Estate Guys are here. To register for the Crisis Investing Webinar, simply send an email to crisis@realestateguysradio.com. That's crisis@realestateguysradio.com. Real world wisdom is the best vaccine for a healthy financial future. Send your email to crisis@realestateguysradio.com.
If you love real estate and have always wanted to own your own business, listen up. The Real Estate Guys and their panel of experts want to teach you how to go full-time fast in the real estate syndication business. These next few years may go down in history as one of the best times ever to acquire investment real estate. There are deals everywhere if you know where to look and how to assemble the resources. The Secrets of Successful Syndication Seminar will show you how to make big money doing big deals from a team of experts that have syndicated projects totaling more than $1 billion. Don't wait for someone to give you a raise or create a job for you. Attend the Secrets of Successful Syndication and learn how to build a team, raise capital, find deals, and make full-time money in 6 months or less. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events. All the big players use syndication as a way to diversify risk, optimize profits, and earn big money. You can too. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events.
Hi, this is Steve Forbes. You're listening to The Real Estate Guys. Have fun. You'll learn something.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show. Whether you're listening on the radio or wherever you listen to great podcasts, we're glad you're here. We're talking about how the stimulus we've seen lately and will likely continue to will affect real estate. Our first guest today is Nomi Prinz, who is an amazing woman and journalist. She has a background in banking, having worked for Chase Manhattan Bank, Bear Stearns in London, and Goldman Sachs. During her career, she's presented to lots of folks, including the Federal Reserve, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank Annual Conference. She's the author of Collusion, How Central Bankers Rigged the World. Please welcome back to the Real Estate Guys radio program, Nomi Prinz. Hey, Nomi.
Hi, how are you? Thank you so much.
Well, it's great to see you again. And you always have a lot to say on many of the topics that we are discussing today. And, you know, a couple of your books really focus on central banking. And as real estate investors, sometimes people put that to the side. They aren't as interested when we start talking about the Fed and monetary policy and printing, but it really does work its way through to the markets and affect real estate. So I think, you know, you've been talking for quite some time, and the last time we had you on the show, about just kind of the, we'll call it, I don't know if it's manipulation or false premise or what, the way that the bankers, the central bankers work. But maybe we'll start with that. And we have seen extraordinary money printing in the crisis. How is all that shaking out?
Well, you're right. We have seen tremendous and far greater, actually, than during the financial crisis of 2008, electronic money printing, not just from the Federal Reserve, but from all of the central banks around the world in trying to keep their liquidity, their credit markets, as they say, their economies, and whatever proportion that money goes to is a separate issue. But all of that sort of as up as possible, given the current pandemic and the crisis that that has created, both from a health and financial, economic, and money standpoint. The Fed itself has printed electronically or effectively grown its own balance sheet from what was $3.7 trillion last summer to $6.7 trillion now. I personally believe, given not just that trajectory, but why it's happening, which is trying to create that money, provide liquidity into the markets, keep rates at zero now, is that it's going to go to at least $10 trillion. Because, and this is kind of how it relates to real estate in two ways. One is obviously the cost of money to the banks, to the lenders, and therefore to anyone investing or refinancing real estate. And then also the purchasing of real estate securities that the banks have created that the Fed has bought in the past for its book and has continued to buy during this period and will continue to buy for its books as well. And that's both regular property, sort of individual properties, up through commercial real estate.
Yeah, and you see, I mean, I know that we've experienced that. We look back to the last downturn, which, of course, is completely different in many ways, but the response, maybe not so much. And there was the whole discussion back leading up to the 2008 meltdown that this liquidity would work its way into the market, to jobs, to so forth, and then the discussion about banks kind of hanging on to that. This time, a lot of the stimulus money has gone directly to people in terms of either unemployment or through the PPP program to businesses with the majority to pay workers. That's not really employment, but the money is kind of getting to the consumer. Does that make any difference?
It makes a difference to those consumers and those individuals that have lost their jobs, or the particularly small businesses who are trying to hold on to their piece of business America, right? And that's a very much a component, a backbone of American economics. And it is a little bit more. And I say a little bit because there was some stimulus given to individuals, not so much small businesses, during the last financial crisis. And since then, the money that had been created by the Fed and the liquidity in the system predominantly didn't go to those small businesses to the same effect that it went to larger businesses. They didn't have the same access to that cheaper money. But now what's happened is, yes, there is a stimulus package. There's two, in fact, and there might be a third one, which has done things for the unemployed in terms of providing money. But, you know, we're still dealing with 30 million people who have filed for jobless claims in the first sort of 6 weeks of this crisis coming upon the American economy. And that's pushed unemployment levels first for the first quarter up to significantly higher than they had been. And we could go to double digits. We could go to 10% to 14% or even in the 20%, which is reminiscent of the Great Depression. So though there is money going into some of those individuals and some of the small businesses, a lot of people aren't getting enough or are just effectively not having gotten anything from some of the loan programs. And hopefully there is a new Main Street lending program that the Federal Reserve has just opened that could help to buy the loans that the Small Business Association is giving to some of these individuals. But still, there will be a lot of people caught up, and that's going to have a real drag on the economy, even when and if it opens in parts and we see what a new normal actually could look like, you know, balancing health and safety issues with economic issues, it's still going to take some time for real sort of spending to occur. And in fact, the savings rate right now of the American public over the last quarter, the latest data shows that it's over 13%. And it hasn't been that high since Reagan, since 1981. People, when they can, are trying to save their liquidity rather than spend their liquidity because of how uncertain these times are.
That makes complete sense. And I think we've seen that happen. You know, one of the things as landlords, if you will, especially residential real estate investors, is there are several places where people have lost their jobs. A lot of those people are tenants. So that affects their ability to pay rent. So that kind of works its way on down the line to mortgage companies having to, you know, be gentle and all of that. But ultimately, all this printing does end up in the economy, right? So you brought up interest rates, which are key to real estate investors. It's kind of the thing we operate on. We're going to buy a property with leverage. So certainly real estate investors of all shapes and sizes, and really everybody, but investors are considering what rates may be when they're making decisions. There are certainly the folks you talked about that are saving more, so they're maybe less likely to make purchases. People are indicating they're less likely to buy homes, and that's maybe obvious. But investors look at the other side. Does that mean there's opportunity? Will there be some bargains to pick up? Will there be some people that could be helped out? And on that side, what would you expect that long-term interest rates might look like coming out of this, recognizing that you don't have that crystal ball we'd all love to have?
Yeah, well, first of all, there's definitely opportunity as people unfortunately have to make decisions, even if they have some months of forgiveness or deferment of certain loan payments. In terms of whether they want to stay in their properties from a residential perspective and how long they want to stay. And also if they ultimately want to downsize, you know, that they don't necessarily want as much leverage or they want to refinance their leverage, but that gives opportunity to other people who have more access to leverage and access to funds. And right now with rates where they are, for example, 30-year rate for a jumbo loan is about 3 3/8. It was a 3.5 a couple of weeks ago. I don't know that that gets much lower than that. I truly believe that even though the Fed will keep rates at zero for literally the foreseeable future, and I'm talking 2-3 years. I mean, I don't see us getting out of this economic situation, the credit liquidity situation, the Fed raising rates literally anytime soon. So that's kind of just, you know, in the future it might happen, but not now. But I think with the 10-year having sort of dipped into the, you know, 0.5, 0.6 area and sort of bumping back up, even if it goes a little bit below that because we have another, let's say, stock market sort of downturn and liquidity kind of dries up a little bit for an interim sort of period, I think the Fed has shown that it will be there. It will buy treasury bonds, and that will, I think, create a scenario where rates may have seen their bottom for investors, which means that I think it's a good time right now for people financing, whether it's for residential up through commercial investment opportunities or switching if they can, to kind of lock in those rates in this period. And in that respect, I think there's also opportunity, especially if you're looking at locking in, you know, 10-year, 15, 30-year type of mortgage or financing situation. I also think that a lot of the servicers, sort of the in between people from the actual lenders and ultimately the investors or people buying residences, are going to be struggling for the very near term because of that lack of payment coming through to them. And some of them are on the margin. And so I think we'll see a consolidation in the servicer side coming in the next few months potentially, which also means that right now we have this sort of opportunity between low rates, servicers still kind of around, and people looking to lock in what they can from an investment standpoint and a rate standpoint. So I do see that kind of being the near-term impact. Now, if we have another leg down, like really down in terms of the market, in terms of liquidity, and the Fed has to step back in, I think that we can reassess that and people will. But I think right now there is sort of multi-month opportunity in the very near future to lock in investment or change properties.
Excellent. Now, you also mentioned jobs. Obviously, that's a critical factor as real estate investors decide which markets to go into, what products types to go into. We've seen upheaval in employment, but that also has been kind of industry specific, right? We were all talking about how we're busier than ever right now, and we're blessed for that. There are people that aren't. There are industries that are going to take big hits, maybe long-term hits, maybe forever hits. So let's talk about jobs. What does it take coming out of that, and what are you seeing in terms of maybe midterm and long-term on the horizon for unemployment and the ability to get folks back to work?
Yeah, I mean, it is tough, and we are blessed that we can do a lot of what we do from home. And certainly millions of people can't do that. And I think what we're seeing right now is sort of the second leg of recent unemployment spike. We're going to see unemployment get much higher in the next quarter. We're going to see jobless claims continue to rise, perhaps rising more slowly because a lot of the main impact sort of happened in the first month or 5 weeks or so, that 30 million plus, that will rise incrementally, but perhaps not in the same amounts. So the question is, yes, what happens to people wanting to return to those jobs? And I think from the small business standpoint, a lot will depend on the liquidity they had, the loans they were able to get, and what kind of forgiveness they can get along the way. We know that 99% of restaurants are operating at 99% capacity on average throughout the country, and that's not going to be an area that's going to snap back. On the other side, sort of retail positions, companies that are involved in sort of delivery processes or been able to sort of rejig themselves to do that are actually hiring. I think from a technical platform standpoint, one of the reasons that the technical stocks, the tech stocks have kind of hung in there is because those do facilitate sort of both work at home as well as, large scale sort of, corporate environments. And so they have that ability to straddle. And I think they could be hiring. Like if I was just starting right now, as I was actually for the around the 1987 crash way back out of college, I would be looking to be a computer programmer. I'd be looking to be in engineering for infrastructure projects. I'd be looking renewable energy, natural gas type, sort of hybrid types of positions coming out or retooling myself, because I think in those areas there will be jobs. So I think it's going to look different. I don't think that all those people, unfortunately, are going to go back to the jobs that they had. Some will. Again, it depends. But I think there are areas where there will be actually opportunities and where, in fact, there is hiring. It will just take time for all those people, unfortunately, to come back into the workforce.
You know, we often talk about this idea of recession-resistant pricing when you're picking a property. So the properties that tend to do well in an up or down market, people have to live somewhere. Residential properties kind of below median. Well, there are certainly, as you're pointing out, industries and specific companies that are going to be more resistant to changes and those that aren't. So love that perspective. But let's talk about, some of the new normal. If we see patterns changing, right? You're a gal that gets on a plane a lot. We've met each other in different places and, go to conferences and those things. Our travel, I'm 120 flight a year kind of guy, and that's all changed. So we are seeing some realities. But at the same time, it's also creating some efficiency. Companies are recognizing maybe they don't need quite as many folks, which is bad for the people, but maybe good for the businesses. What are some of the shifts? Because I know you look at a lot of different industries. Are there other shifts that we should be keeping our eye on?
Well, I think you're right in terms of those conferences, in terms of, sort of board meetings, in terms of any company is going to be looking at its bottom line now and saying, okay, well, this kind of worked out without us, sort of bringing people around the world or sort of sponsoring large scale things. And I think that's going to be a tweak that's going to happen really across the entire international business community. And that's going to dampen some of the travel-related businesses, but it's going to increase the value of the more technical businesses. And I think people are going to get more creative. And I think there's going to be sort of new developments in terms of what that means. Is that, easier forms of, animating conferences? Or are there areas in technology where you're going to be able to grab information and data and sort of more the ability to seem real? Where the businesses that can withstand that. And I think there's going to be some intelligent probably workarounds on that. But in terms of the real estate side of that, just to loop back into that though, what I'm hearing and seeing as I'm speaking to people I can't go to at the moment around the world in terms of the major cities is that there's kind of a rethink in terms of what a major city is going to look like in the next couple of years. And in terms of, you know, maybe being just outside the cities where people have lived or have had real relatives or have had cheaper sort of lifestyles. And that could be a corporate change as well as an individual residential change. There's kind of this idea of a pull from the cities, perhaps for a little bit in the next few years. Because if people aren't commuting as much, if people can connect more in, and if cities have more restrictions from what cities used to look like just in the next couple of years, then there's more opportunity perhaps in outside of city types of areas to build businesses and to set down, you know, sort of real estate stakes.
Awesome. Love that. More food for thought. Well, my goodness, it is always great to be around you, Nomi. I knew you wouldn't let us down in terms of access to lots of great statistics. You watch this stuff. Before we get you out of here, how do folks keep up with what you do, your books, your newsletter? How can folks follow you?
Well, the best thing to do, I think, is to check out my website, which is www.nomiprinz.com. My other books, all my books are available through that, through Amazon, through your independent bookstore link throughout the country, throughout the world.
All right. Well, good stuff. Thank you so much for being back on the program. We'll look forward to seeing you when life resumes.
Thank you so much. You as well.
There's Nomi Prinz. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. More when we return, I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Need help with your real estate investment portfolio? Check out the resources page at realestateguysradio.com.
In uncertain times like this, it's great to know there are two things you can always count on. High demand for affordable single-family homes to live in, and Terry Kerr's amazing Memphis team at Mid-South Home Buyers to find, fix, and manage the next addition to your recession-resistant real estate portfolio. The Memphis market is a logistics and distribution dynamo with an economic engine that's essential to moving goods and critical supplies all over the United States. Quality rehab, proven profitable property management, affordable rents, and solid ROI make turnkey property investing through Terry's team a dream when it matters most. To learn more about Memphis and Mid-South home buyers, send an email to midsouth@realestateguysradio.com. That's midsouth@realestateguysradio.com.
Real Estate Guys listeners, are you tired of losing real estate deals due to financing issues? Have you had enough of waiting on banks, lenders, and investor groups to fund new projects? What if there were a way to eliminate all the hassle and invest in real estate on your own terms? I'm here to tell you there is. Patrick Donahoe here from Paradigm Life. I'm an Investopedia top 100 most influential financial advisor, and I recently wrote a best-selling book about the financial strategy that changed my entire investment model and the one that could change yours. To get a copy of my book for free and learn how you can maximize your real estate portfolio by acting as your own bank, send an email to mybank@realestateguysradio.com. Don't make another real estate deal without reading my book first. Email mybank@realestateguysradio.com now to get your copy for free.
Hi, I'm G. Edward Griffin, author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, a second look at the Federal Reserve. And you're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Guys radio program, heard every weekend on this great radio station, all the time at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for tuning in today. We're talking about what the unprecedented stimulus we're seeing means for real estate investors. Great to hear from Nomi Prinz. We're about to hear from our good friend Peter Schiff. Before we do that, let's play Real Estate Trivia, your chance to win a prize by knowing today's Real Estate Trivia question. In just a minute, I'll give you a question, and your job will be to come up with the answer. To do that, just send an email to trivia@realestateguysradio.com, trivia@realestateguysradio.com. Give us your name, the answer to the question, and your mailing address. Because if you're the winner, that's the first person that gets it correct, you're going to win a copy of Peter Schiff's great book, The Real Crash. That can be yours if you know today's real estate trivia question. Last week on The Real Estate Guys, it was Ask the Guys, and while you asked us a bunch of questions, we asked you this. Why does Brevard County in Florida have the area code 321? Well, maybe it was obvious. We had lots of people guess it's 321 because it's in recognition of the countdown to each launch from the Kennedy Space Center. 3, 2, 1. Here's our real estate trivia question for this week. which U.S. state has the most lakes? Yeah, of the 50 U.S. states, one has more lakes than any other, by a lot, by the way. If you think you know or just want to guess, send your best guess to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. trivia@realestateguysradio.com. You'll need to send us your name, the answer to the question, which is a state's name, and your mailing address so that we can send you an awesome book by Peter Schiff, who's coming up next. That's today's Real Estate Trivia Question. We're talking about what unprecedented stimulus means for real estate. Our next guest has been talking about the inevitable crash for some time. We first read Crash Proof, his excellent book back in 2006, where he warned of the housing crisis and sure got that one right. And then, of course, The Real Crash, his book that came out to say we haven't seen nothing yet. We're about to find out if this is the real crash. Let's say hello to our good friend, Peter Schiff. Hey, Peter.
Hey, how are you guys?
We're good. How are you? And how are things in your beautiful part of the world?
Well, it's getting warm here in Puerto Rico. So next week, we'll be heading north back up to Connecticut. But they're just starting to open things up. Puerto Rico really went off the deep end, I think, when it came to the shutdowns and the quarantine. We actually still have a curfew, in effect. We're not allowed out after 7 p.m. It's really been a bit crazy over here, but at least the weather has been nice.
Well, that's good. You know, Puerto Rico's had a rough couple of years, and this certainly hasn't helped, but it's good to hear that they're, I guess, being cautious. How's commerce and the economy and all that?
Oh, it's pretty much shut down. It's hard to get anything done. And as I said, they're gradually starting to open up businesses. But, you know, I mean, this is true all over the country. And when I wrote a book, the book, The Real Crash, I had assumed that the real crash would have come sooner.
Yeah.
But it's now going to come later. But this is it. I think that COVID-19 is the pin that is really putting a gaping hole in this bubble, which got a lot bigger than I imagined it would when I first wrote Crash Proof. And I warned about the then bubble in the housing market and the financial crisis that would result when it popped. My forecast was that the monetary policy that would be pursued and the fiscal policy in the aftermath of that to try to stimulate the economy out of what I said would be the worst recession since the Great Depression, I believe that that monetary and fiscal policy would cause a dollar crash and that would ignite massive inflation and then the economy would collapse. Well, that didn't happen because instead of just attempting to reflate the bubble, they succeeded. And so that bubble really began to leak air in the last part of 2018. In fact, the air started coming out in 2016, but then Donald Trump kind of threw it for a loop by winning. And that really postponed the recession because it created a lot of false optimism. And in that environment, the Fed was finally able to raise rates from 0.25%, which is where it still was when Trump was elected. Remember, before Trump was elected, the Fed had managed just one rate hike. That's all it had, from zero. Despite all this talk about how they would normalize rates, they never actually tried to do it until Trump was elected, and then you had all this enthusiasm. And so during that, you know, euphoria, the Fed was able to get rates up to about 2.5. Then all hell broke loose in the fourth quarter of 2018. We had the biggest decline in the stock market since the Great Depression. And that's when the Fed did what I was warning they would do on pretty much every summit at sea I was at. I said they would have to abort their attempt to normalize interest rates. They could never shrink their balance sheet. If they tried, they would fail. And all of a sudden, the Fed stopped hiking rates. They cut rates 3 times in 2019. They restarted quantitative easing. They stopped quantitative tightening. They started expanding their balance sheet again. So this was already happening before COVID-19 came along. Then COVID-19 happens, and that accelerated the process, right? A much bigger hole in the bubble. And the point that everybody is missing is that COVID-19 is the pin. The problem is the bubble that the pin pricked, because everybody thinks we had a great economy before COVID-19. We didn't. We have a bubble. We had a bubble.
Right.
And so they think all we have to do is like turn the economy back on, and everything will go back to being great. Well, we can't go back to the way we were because we can't reflate that bubble. So there is no turning the economy back on because we can't reflate a bubble. So people are wrong if they think that, well, you know, this is going to be a quick, you know, self-inflicted wound and we're going to heal. It's not. I mean, yes, COVID is making it worse. But the problem is the economy that existed before COVID. And not only is the disease going to make it worse, but the government's cure is far worse than the disease itself. And not just the shutting down the economy. It's the financing the shutdown with budget deficits and printing money. I mean, it'd be one thing if we were using our savings, right, to get us through this storm. But we don't. We don't have any savings. Thanks to the Fed, we're all broke, right? Everybody is living paycheck to paycheck. Everybody is levered up. And so while everybody is sheltering at home and not working, not producing goods, not providing services, the Fed is printing all this money. And in fact, there's a lot of people today that are sitting at home getting bigger checks from the government than they got from their employers. Except when they were working, they were contributing into the economy. Now they contribute nothing, but they're trying to take out by spending the government money. So we are creating an inflationary nightmare, right? All this government, right? This huge increase in government. People are not asking, how are we going to pay for this? Right? The government is spending trillions and trillions more than it was. The government is now actually spending more money from debt than taxation. See, I just looked at the numbers today. 51.5 cents out of every federal dollar spent has been borrowed. So this, the national debt is $25.5 trillion and skyrocketing. The Fed's balance sheet is $7 trillion. So we're getting this massive increase in government spending, and no one's getting a tax hike. In fact, people are getting tax cuts. So how are we going to pay for all this government? We're not getting it for free. So it's inflation. It's going to be a destruction in the purchasing power of the dollar. So all the problems I was worried about a decade ago are now much bigger than they were then. And so the inflationary consequence, the real crash, is going to be far bigger now than it would have been had it come sooner.
Well, and that's one of the things you've talked about on the summit and certainly at conferences, the fact that the longer we wait, the worse it is. In this case, you know, Peter, you referred to COVID as a black swan with teeth. Like, it's bad because not only is it pricked the bubble, but it's lingering and it's taking time, and we've got unemployment, we've got businesses closing and all that stuff that's going on. What do you see that eventuality like?
Well, look, this is another financial crisis, only much bigger than 08. I mean, it doesn't even matter now about the pin. The pin is irrelevant at this point because the bubble's already been pricked, right? And so what was the pin in 2008? It was real estate prices falling, right? Because right. Once real estate prices fell, then real estate loans went into default. And then the lenders lost money, so it turned into a financial crisis. And also, people now had less wealth because the recovery was kind of powered by the wealth effect. People living in appreciated homes not only felt richer, but they can actually borrow the equity out of their homes and spend it. So you had a lot of spending that was a function of the real estate wealth, which all went away when the real estate wealth went away. But this is a much bigger financial crisis because it's just not just the mortgage borrowers who aren't paying their loans. It's everybody. Think about all the businesses that are defaulting now, right? Not just homeowners that are defaulting. I mean, this is not just a residential real estate crisis. This is going to be a commercial real estate crisis. I mean, commercial real estate kind of got a pass in 08 because when the Fed slashed rates, that kind of propped up the commercial market. But this time around, rates were practically at zero before the crisis. So it's not like going from 2 to 0 is that big a deal in real estate compared to the loss of rental income, right? You got the office buildings. People are not paying their rents, or companies are going bankrupt, and other companies are deciding, you know, my people are working from home anyway. What do I need all this space? You got like WeWork and companies like that that have all this space for sublet or gone bankrupt. And then you have the nightmare in retail, which, you know, these companies were on life support before COVID. They were hanging on by a string, and now the string is gone. So the stores, the department stores, in the malls, in the shopping centers, these guys aren't paying their rent. But it's not just, you know, the stores. Gyms aren't paying their rent, right? Look at now, the rental car companies are going under. Avis just filed. You know, that auto bubble has now popped. Look at all the Americans that have borrowed money to buy cars. What's going to happen to the used car market when you have all these cars that the rental companies, A, they're not even buying new cars. They were big buyers of cars. Now they're going to be big sellers of cars. So the bubble air is coming out of the auto bubble. So this is the financial crisis on steroids as far as the amount of debt that can't be paid. And so the loans that are going into default, the losses that are going to be spread over the economy. And so in order to try to, you know, prop everything up, the Fed is having to act on a much bigger scale. So everything it did wrong in 08, it's doing wrong now, only on a bigger scale. It's having to print way more money. It's having to bail out way more companies, right? The deficits that we had back then are far bigger now. And people think, well, we got away with it back then, right? We printed all this money and we didn't have to suffer any adverse consequences. The dollar didn't crash. Bonds didn't crash. We didn't have the inflation, right? We had a slow recovery, but it was a long, the longest one ever. It, you know, we had a recovery and look, real estate went back up. Stocks went back up. So people think that because we got away with it before, we're going to get away with it again. We're not, right? People have been lulled into a false sense of security, complacency in thinking that we can print all this money and not have any negative consequences. Well, they're going to be even worse now than they would have been had we had them a decade ago.
So, Peter, let's talk about that because there's all this money printing, and we did see that movie before, and you brought our attention to that several times on this show. We've talked about the latest round of Twist or QE or whatever they were calling it at the time. And now more money printing than ever. It's actually working, or some of it's working its way into the hands of people who are spending it on rent or food or whatever they need. Where does that all show up eventually? I know you have opinions on gold, on the dollar. What do you think this looks like in a year or two?
Well, it is going to show up in consumer prices in a big, big way. Because, you know, there are two things that are going on now in the economy. On the supply side, we're having a reduction in supply, right? Because if fewer people are working, well, they're not producing products that they produced in the past. They're not providing services that they were out there providing in the past. So the supply of stuff is going down. And certainly, you know, a lot of the stuff that we were importing from countries like China, they're not making as much stuff anymore to export to us. They might consume it themselves. So we're not going to be able to import as much stuff. We're not going to make as much stuff. So there's less stuff. At the same time, there's more money. People have more money now, in many cases, than they had before when they were making stuff, right? Now they're getting checks for doing nothing. So you have more money and less stuff, right? Obviously, consumer prices are going to go way up. And yes, demand is going to go down. Everybody is focusing on that. People are going to be unemployed. People aren't making as much money. People have to start rebuilding their savings now that they had a wake-up call. Hey, I'm broke. I can't pay my rent, right? So people are going to cut back on their spending. And so demand will be down, but supply is going to go down even more. So prices are going to rise even as demand falls. We haven't experienced that before. Well, we did it in the 1970s, but we haven't experienced it recently. That's what's been able to mitigate every downturn. Now, as far as the finance is concerned, see, I think this is the straw that breaks the camel's back for the dollar. That the reason we were able to get away with these monetary mistakes in the past was because the dollar survived as the reserve currency. And it's still surviving today. That's why we've been able to print trillions and trillions this year, and we haven't seen the dollar tank. But I think we're going to, you know, cross the line on how much debt the world is willing to allow and continue to accept the dollar as the reserve. See, the problem is you don't know where that line is until you've crossed it, because it surprises me that we haven't already crossed it. But I think we're going to do it in this cycle. And it may be early in this cycle. It may be before the end of this year. Who knows? But we are going to pass the point of no return, and then the dollar is going to collapse. And then all the inflation chickens come home to roost. The prices really skyrocket. Interest rates soar. And, you know, right now, interest on the national debt is about, I don't know, $350 billion a year because we're paying 1.5%. What happens when interest rates go to 5%? We'd be paying more on interest than we pay on Medicare. In fact, if interest rates went to 10% by the time the national debt was at $30 trillion, which is probably next year, I think interest on the national debt would be more than the national defense, Medicare, and Social Security combined. In fact, we could be at a point where 100% of our tax revenue would be needed just to pay the interest on the national debt. We'd have to shut down everything else government did, which obviously we're not going to do. So we're going to default, right? Either we do it honestly or we do it through inflation. My bet is through inflation. So all these dollar-denominated assets become worthless. And so people need to, you know, do what I've been advocating as quickly as they can. I mean, I was telling people to do it too early, but better than too late, because people are about to get wiped out who don't have gold, don't have silver, don't have mining stocks, don't have overseas assets where income streams are coming in currencies that are not the dollar, the currencies that are going to gain the purchasing power that the dollar loses.
Well, Matt, something you've been teaching us about for quite some time, looking at companies that are in other places that aren't as beholden to the dollar or don't have the same concerns. All currencies are fiat. So that's back to the, you know, cleanest dirty shirt in the hamper. It's been the dollar, but there's been moves already, right? China and Russia and lots of folks out there who are holding these dollars as they go down in value, they're looking for an alternative. What do you think that, how does that manifest? How does the dollar get knocked out of the reserve currency and what takes its place?
Yeah, well, remember, I mean, we're only the cleanest dirty shirt in the hamper by default.
Right.
And it's only because that we are the reserve currency that our shirt looks less dirty, right? Because it's almost like the worse things get around the world, the more money comes into the US. And so as things get bad, we get more money to borrow and spend. So we actually benefit from everybody else's problem, because when everybody has a problem, they lend us more money.
Right.
But what that means is that we're able to make our own problems worse, because the more money we borrow, the bigger our debt bubble gets. So that's the paradox, is the worse things get, the more money the world wants to loan us, which only allows us to dig ourselves into an even deeper hole than the one that everybody is ignoring. So we're actually in worse shape. We're actually the dirtiest shirt in that hamper, except no one smells it yet, right? Because we're the reserve currency. So, but at some point, right, the stench is going to be so bad that, I mean, how big can these deficits get, right? We're at, what, $3, $4 trillion a year? I mean, we're about to find out, right? Because we're going to pass that point. But, you know, other people make the mistake. They say, well, the dollar is always going to be the reserve currency because there's no other currency that can take its place. And I would agree in that there's no other currency that deserves to be the reserve currency. But then neither does the dollar. So if there are no currencies, including the dollar, that should be the reserve currency, then why should the dollar continue in that role when we have a perfect alternative, gold? Gold was the reserve asset before the dollar. It wasn't the British pound. It was gold. The pound was the dominant currency, but gold was the reserve. We created this situation where the dollar became a reserve instead of gold, only because the dollar was as good as gold. Because at the time that we got the world to accept this arrangement, if you had $35, you had an ounce of gold. You could get it whenever you wanted.
Yep.
We had all the gold. We were the world's richest creditor nation. We had these huge trade surpluses. I mean, everything that was manufactured in America. If you wanted to buy anything, you needed dollars. So we had all the gold. We had all the stuff. It made sense. And we told the world, hey, if you hold gold, you don't get any interest on your gold. But if you let us store your gold in Fort Knox, whatever, and we'll just give you dollars, you can buy U.S. treasuries. And you're going to get, what, 7%, 8%, whatever the yields were back then? And that was like a good deal because the world got to have their gold and interest too, right? Hey, why hold the gold and get nothing when we can get these treasuries and get all this interest? We get our gold whenever we want. So that's the reason that the world went on this standard. Of course, they would never agree to it based on today's terms. You take these dollars that are backed by nothing, and by the way, you buy treasuries and you're going to get no yield. Nobody would do it, right? So we would never have the dollar as the reserve if we tried to go on it now. It's only because it's left over from what we started with, right? So there's a lot of inertia to giving it up. We went off the gold standard in 1971. The dollar tanked, lost two-thirds of its value. Gold went from 35 to 850. But even though the dollar was marked down, it stayed as the reserve currency at a lower exchange rate. And that's what really led to these big problems, because once we realized that we could just print money without having any gold to back it up, that's when we really started to grow government and grow deficits. But the world went along with it. And now we're in a situation today where, you know, we're, you know, completely run amok because we've been able to do this for so long. But I think what happens is when the world says enough, they don't try to put the crown of, you know, a king on another currency. Because again, no currency can offer what America offered at the time of Bretton Woods, after the Second World War. There's nobody that can equal what we were. And look at all the damage that was done to the world by giving the U.S. the power to print the reserve currency. Why, you know, bestow that power on the ECB or on Japan or on China? Who wants to give that power to the Chinese? Nobody. So we want to take the power away from everybody and go back to real money, right? Which would be gold. So that's where we're headed. Gold is going to be remonetized. All the central banks already have gold in reserve. They just need more of it. And of course, when the price goes up to 10,000 or 20,000, that will accomplish a lot of it because they don't have to buy it. What they own just gains in value. And so now their composition of reserves is much higher in gold, just simply by market appreciation, which is going to happen. But of course, other central banks are going to buy more gold. But this is going to be the big game changer for the U.S., right? Because if your country is not a reserve currency, if you're New Zealand, if you're Sweden, I mean, there's no change for you. You're just having gold as reserves instead of dollars. I mean, the New Zealand central bank can't print dollars just like they can't print gold. So to them, it's like, okay, we're just going to use gold instead of dollars, right? It doesn't change for them. The big change is for America. Because see, we used to be able to print dollars. We can't print gold. Right. So now all of a sudden, we're the country that goes from living beyond its means to living within its means. Right. Now, if we want to import something, we have to export something to pay for it. So it's a whole new game. So America has the most to lose short term. Right. Long term, I think it's a win for everybody to go back to sound money. But in the short run, the pain will be felt most intensely in America.
All right. Great stuff, Peter. Hey, what is it that an investor really can do today, given all this?
Even in stuff like what you guys do, recognize there's going to be some tremendous opportunities in the future in all sorts of distressed assets. So it's not simply about converting your dollars into gold now or gold stocks, but now begin to think what you're going to convert that back into when you sell, right? Because people are going to have incredible opportunities when the time is right, if the time is right. I mean, if we become a complete socialist country, the time may never be right in our lifetimes. But if we learn our lesson and we do the right thing, in the environment of doing the right thing, there'll be nothing but blood in the streets. Things will be very cheap, right? Anyway, you know, right now, even Warren Buffett talked about this, that, you know, he had a lot of cash. And a lot of these companies that were in trouble were coming to Warren Buffett looking for deals where he was going to be able to write his own ticket. And then all of a sudden the bailouts came and they stopped calling him because the government gave them a better deal than Warren Buffett, right? Well, when the government can't bail anybody out anymore because the paper money has no value, right? And now you need real money. You need real investors to come in and pick up the pieces. There will be incredible bargains, right? To buy real estate, to buy businesses, all sorts of things. Really, literally, you'll be able to buy for, you know, let's say, you know, you bought something, you bought an ounce of gold, you'll be able to buy stuff with a 20th of that ounce, you know, relative to what it would cost you now. Your gold will go a much further way. So you need to be defensive now so you have the ammunition to go on the offense, right? When nobody else does. when everybody is broke and paper money doesn't cut it, right? You're going to need real money. So that, and that would be the best situation, because that would mean that we've done the right thing, that we've swallowed that bitter tasting medicine. And even though we're at the bottom of a long tunnel, you know, we'll be able to know there's light at the end of it when other people can't see it, right? They don't recognize, you know, because capitalism is extremely powerful. You know, I mean, look at what we built in this country in the 19th century with none of the technology that we have today. And so if we were so successful back then, imagine how much more successful we could be now, right? Because we're not going to lose. I mean, the stuff that we have as far as buildings and equipment and technology, none of that's going anywhere. Paper wealth is going to blow up, but the things that we have are here, even if somebody else owns them, right? Even if the people who currently own those means of production or those assets aren't the future owners, they're still here. And everything we've learned, all of our knowledge, we're not going to forget everything that we learned over the last couple of hundred years. And I think a gold standard, when we go back to it, will work even better now in the internet age than it worked back then. So we have all the equipment we need. The only hurdle we have to overcome is ourselves. We have to overcome the democracy impact, the something for nothing, right? But if we can just get the mindset right and re-embrace the principles that we once embraced as a nation of freedom and individual liberty and limited government and sound money, if we can do that, the society and the quality of living that we can build and the time it would take to build it, right? It would dwarf the Industrial Revolution that we had in the 19th century. So we have all the tools. The question is, will we have the mindset? Will we have the guts to actually use them? Or will we take the coward's way out and just surrender to big government and make that deal with the devil and then have to pay the price?
All right, well, there is so much here. And of course, Peter will have more on our crisis webinar coming up. But for folks that are interested in listening to your podcast and learning more about what you do at Euro Pacific, how do folks get a hold of you?
Well, I mean, I'm pretty easy to find on the internet. You can go to my YouTube channel, The Schiff Report, follow me on Twitter. You know, I think I just hit 240,000 Twitter followers. So the truth is getting out there. Look, I'm on social media, Facebook, so follow me on those platforms. Schiff Radio is the website, the official hosting site for the podcast. And tell your friends. You know, I mean, the only thing that's spreading faster than the coronavirus right now is ignorance, economic ignorance. So I'm the antidote to that, right? I'm the vaccine to that economic ignorance. So you got to make sure that people take that vaccine by listening to my podcast. But again, the most important thing, too, if you have the resources, don't get wiped out. Like, there's a lot of people that are younger, they have nothing but debt, so they got nothing to lose but their freedom, right? They don't have any wealth, right? Inflation destroys the saver. It transfers wealth from the people who save to the people who have borrowed. Of course, the U.S. government, being the biggest debtor in the history of the world, obviously sees inflation as its only way out. But when the government wipes out its debts, it wipes out your assets. So don't lose. Don't sit back and watch what it took you a lifetime to save evaporate.
Peter, as always, thank you for your time and your gigantic brain.
Thank you.
Always good to hear from and hang out with Peter Schiff. And of course, really thrilled to have Nomi Prinz back with us today. Thanks to you, our listener. Coming up, we have our crisis webinar. Both of these folks go into greater detail than today on where we are, what's happening, where there may be opportunities, the best offense, the best defense. Putting that together all right now in our crisis webinar. It's going to be amazing, and there's no cost. All you have to do is get on the list. To do that, send an email to crisis@realestateguysradio.com. crisis@realestateguysradio.com. We'll certainly be watching the effect the continuous stimulus has on the real estate market. Until next week, go out and make some equity happen.
This episode of the Real Estate Guys Radio Show is brought to you by Paradigm Life, powerful cash management strategies using life insurance. Learn more at beyourbank.com. Mid-South Home Buyers, low-cost, turnkey cash flow properties in Memphis, Tennessee. Corporate Direct, asset protection strategies for real estate investors from attorney and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton.
Find these and other great companies under the Resources tab at realestateguysradio.com. To learn how you can expose your product or service to the Real Estate Guys audience, call 888-489-7723 extension 4. That's 888-489-7723 extension 4. Or use the feedback page at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Real Estate Guys Radio Show.